I'm going to give the sermon I gave a title for. This is going to be totally different today. I got to working on that. I appreciate what Sal had to say, by the way. Matter of fact, I almost covered the same thing, had some of the same scriptures. I wanted to continue on the same subject I had 2 weeks ago, but I think I covered it sufficiently, and I appreciate the fact that you continued with that. I want to talk to you today, and I didn't want to let another week go by without discussing some of the difficult situation our countries are in, considering what is happening. We're coming up last week and this week with two momentous events. This coming week is going to be one in which the United States is going to have to either raise its debt ceiling or some serious things are going to take place, and that is they may default on their debts. Not only that, to even continue operating, they're simply going to have to rely upon the cash flow of income coming in from, normal revenues. Well, and we've been spending a lot more than that, which, of course, is part of the problem. it's hard to imagine what the world is going to be like 1 year from now. 1 year ago, it was hard to imagine where we were now. You go back to 2008, it was hard to imagine where we are now, or 2007, you want to go back 4 years. We simply had very little idea. We tend to think that things are simply, they're going to go on. They're always simply going to go on, and there's not going to be any going back, as it were, no consequences as a result of what we've done. Well, we are paying the piper now. We're going to have to pay considerably for some of the practices that been a part of for a very, very long time, going back a lot longer than 4 years, in fact. And then let me just, before we get into some of this, we do tend to think we're in good shape here in this country, in the sense that our trade is good, our balance of payments is reasonable, China buys our resources, the Aussie dollar is strong, banks are strong, unemployment is hovering around 5%, one of the best in the Western world, and it just keeps powering ahead, so we say. However, there are some things here on the horizon we really have to look at and say, are we in as good a shape as we think we are here? Now, will the U.S. raise its debt ceiling? It always has in the past. Congress seems to go right up to the brink. I mean, they do practice brinkmanship, and they come to an agreement right at the last moment. We don't know that that's going to happen this time. You have a pretty strong grassroots movement out there called the Tea Party, which in one way we would certainly sympathize with. I would suspect we would. I certainly have a certain lot of sympathy for some of the ideas. However, there doesn't seem to be a middle ground here as to what might happen. We're into a very, very bad situation, and sometimes the patient, you're gonna put a patient into a coma just to get him out of the coma. I don't know. I'm trying to work this out as to what the solution might be economically. And there are some. I think there is a middle ground in it. That's just my opinion. I'm not an economist, but we'll have to see exactly what they will do this time. Are they going to perpetuate the problem simply by going into borrowing? And if we do, then all we're doing is buying time. And if we don't, the U.S. could go into a free fall, and that would not only affect what's going on in the United States, it's going to affect what's going on in the entire world. Employment will go higher. The credit rating will drop. The financial engine, as it were, of the world, the generation of the generating of wealth, as it were, will somehow falter. All the nations will somehow be affected, and this will, in turn, give an open door for another power to rise and fill the vacuum, and to then eventually take control of things in a way that a lot of people are not going to like. I think you know what I'm referring to here. But here's the situation behind the scenes. The leadership that the United States held in the world before that and before that, rather, Great Britain, since the end of the 19th century, has waned to a point that a vacuum in world leadership has occurred since 2008. The United States, until recently, held the dominant position of the world financially. What we saw was the greatest empire that the world has ever seen. And it was an economic empire. Then, of course, later, as it went on, it became, let's say, or concurrent with that, it became also a military superpower. And it dominated. It dominated economically, and it dominated militarily. And, of course, it was able to have its way in the world. It provided the world, admittedly, a great deal of stability. Now, it was intended, right? I mean, it just simply did that. And not everybody agreed with it. You had people out here say, you know, down with the United States here and there and everything else. But in any case, for the most part, it still provided a great deal of stability in the world in which you could carry on your life, you could carry on your business, especially in the Western world, and things were reasonably or relatively safe. Now, but the United States has enjoyed the supreme position in the world almost without opposition for about 23 years. Now, you just do the figure on that. This occurred when Ronald Reagan confronted or had a meeting with Gorbachev in Iceland. Am I correct in saying this was 1988? I believe it was. In which they came to the brink and Gorbachev backed down because the Soviet Union did not have the ability to continue their military buildup and to match the United States. Ronald Reagan simply says, we're going to outdo you, we're going to produce weaponry, we're going to beat you at it, and here's the deal, you back down, let's come to some kind of an agreement. And he turned around and he was walking out the door, and Gorbachev says, wait. It changed the world. Right there. And it changed it for the next 23 years until 2008. We don't enjoy that anymore. A very, very short period of time. It was a period of unparalleled supremacy in where one of the Israelite nations that God had made promises to or said that he would do had that for a very short period of time. Now, there was a lot going on prior to that. I just simply want to point out that one period where it was unparalleled in the world, in which there was no opposition. There was no contention. Everything changed after that. The greatest financial empire in the world began to become unglued. And for some very important and sad reasons, I will tell you. Americans thought that they could have anything they wanted, and they bought it on borrowed money. One of the main culprits were the homes that people bought who could not pay the mortgage. The U.S. government backed these loans through government agencies such as Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae. You've heard that. That's all they were. This is what backed a lot of the loans then that the lending institutions and banks lent the money to people to who couldn't afford them. And so why not? These people could get into homes. The price of homes went up. They continued to buy. Banks continued to lend. They made money. The lenders made money. The agents made money on it. A rise in prices of real estate in the United States. People kept buying until they found out they couldn't pay back their loans. So we got a problem here. It was quite catastrophic. And other countries held those mortgages in the form of various, well, they were packaged up and sold to them as investments, in which, and the riskier the loans were, by the way, the higher was the return on those investments. And so you had a lot of people who were also hurt by that. But it wasn't just that. It was debt. It was debt, more than just real estate, but people borrowed money based upon what they thought they had in value, and they spent a lot of that money, and they leveraged out their debt, their ability to buy, to buy things. And so, yeah, and it was great for China. Wonderful China. Wonderful for South Korea. Japan, just buy their goods. Just great. Kept it all going. And America then was the one who spent, and a lot of the nations, as long as the American dollar was the reserve currency in the world, all benefited from it. We bought oil from the Middle East. We bought goods from China. We bought services from India. I mean, look, folks, we were into it. We were spending money like we just had, all the money in the world to spend. It comes home to roost one day. 2008, it all came home. Now, we're not even talking about government debt. I think I showed you a video here a little over a year ago about the amount of government debt and the entitlements that people have in the United States and what they're supposed to have. The United States is not going to be able to support that. They won't. They're going to renege on this. And people who were looking for Social Security, for Medicare, for all kinds of other, subsidies and entitlements and everything else that we've got, simply it's just not gonna be there. So government has gone to the point where how in the world we're going to pay for our debts. So we're looking to increase now the debt ceiling, not by millions, not by billions, but now trillions. I mean, we should try to work this out. How in the world is this going to be paid for? I'm hearing these figures, and I'm trying to soak them up, and it just doesn't compute. My brain just doesn't calculate this, these kind of figures. But the whole idea is, if you were somehow not to borrow any more money, how many tens and maybe hundreds of years it would take then to pay it back at a particular rate, and it just goes on, even if you didn't borrow any more money. Now, of course, they have to take that money, use it, borrow it, so they can make more money, so they can invest it, it's just a vicious cycle that you keep going in. So you cut it down, something's going to happen, something bad's going to happen, something big's going to happen if they don't do that. But if they do, it's only going to be perpetuated. You're going to have to produce your way out of it. And we have gone so far beyond producing wealth because we've borrowed so much more than what we are producing and what we are capable of producing. Now, this unraveled some countries whose debt was also so great. They had to look to other more prosperous countries to bail them out, in the form of the World Bank. Central European banking system, of course, has been in the news quite a bit. There's an effect to all of this. And one of the effects, of course, is the devaluing of the U.S. dollar. I didn't even talk about that. I want to get into that in just a moment here. I'm going to show you what's happening. But let me just talk about Australia. Australia should get a brief mention here. Now, don't get the idea that we're not going to be affected here. People, well, we've got, quite a reasonable and commendable unemployment rate, around 5%. We've created a system here just as bad where we cannot live within our means. We say, well, we are. Well, yes, but you got to understand where the government's getting its money to do that. Okay, government needs more money. All right, let's make this clear. If you're going to spend money, you need more money. And so they've got ways of getting it. Anytime you have any inflationary pressure, which we're starting to have now, or you increase, you want, you know, people buy, you're going to have wages. You're taxed on all of that. There is a certain amount of inflation. That's another form of tax. Anything that goes up, that government's going to get its cut. They keep the same percentages of level of taxation. So, sure, they like you to make more money. That means they're going to tax you more. Okay, they'll get more money. So that just only stands to reason. Now, we have a resources boom that gives us wealth, we say. We supply China and other Eastern countries with resources because, well, we're within proximity to them. But we do so at a cost. First cost is we got to sell it to them. We need the money. This leads to financial practices that are going to come back to bite us. Number one, selling at prices that can be dictated by others. Number two, selling the land itself. You ought to take a look at how much land is being bought by other people, mainly China, who is buying up land. They got money. They want to invest it. Buy good old Australian resources. And number three, selling the farm. We got problems here. Australia is a one-trick pony. If you understand the term I use there, that means the one thing we know, sell the resources. And wealth is increasing, yes. But you get the benefit when it is spent through government. All right. Now, some may be passed down, but the government is going to collect more, and so the benefits, one would suspect, would be somewhat reduced because we've got to get people and we've got to pay people to manage all of this. Now, if that wasn't enough, the carbon tax is at its most bare, at its barest, stripped down definition, is a way for the government to get more money from its own people and further penalize them and further take money away from them so they can't make as much money. This is what's happening. You know, it's interesting. God doesn't do that. I had a call from a person who had a capital, sold some of her, some assets that were left to her. And she said, well, should I tithe on this? So what are you going to do with the money? I said, if you're going to go take a vacation, you're going to go buy a boat and do a world cruise. I said, yeah, you ought to tithe on it. But if you're just simply going to roll it over. I said, God doesn't want to, you don't tithe on that. You tithe on the increase that your field brings forth year by year. All right. Value of something is not increase. The way God defines it, Deuteronomy 14:22. Take a good look at this. Deuteronomy 14:22 is, you shall tithe on all the increase that your field brings forth on a yearly basis. Same way the tax office does. Okay. Now, so if you start taking a person's ability away from them, the ability to make money away from them, eventually, God's not going to get as much money. He don't want to do that. He wants you to make as much money as you can. Well, that means you're going to tithe more. But you grow in wealth. Now, wealth ought to be looked at as what you are personally able to produce. We looked upon wealth as the value of our real estate or something else. Well, now it could be if you turn it in there, but that's once you see that fluctuate the way it does. Once you don't have the ability to turn that into real wealth, then is it real wealth? Now this is what a lot of people miss. Now, I don't want to get too deeply into that. I just simply want to help you to understand that what is happening here in this country is that the reduction of the ability of people to actually earn money. And this is done a lot of ways through taxation. It is done through inflation. Okay? And that reduces your ability to produce more. It is in the benefit of yourself. It is in the benefit of the country, the benefit of everything here, that you produce more. Okay? The only way America's going to get out of this, they got to produce more. Now, if they're not going to have the ability to produce more, how are you going to pay off your debt? Somebody's going to be holding some worthless paper here after a while. That's what's going to happen. Now, we got ourselves into this. And I really don't know exactly how we're going to get ourselves out of it. Now, I realize today I didn't get into it that much. I spoke in generalizations. But you get the idea. Do you find this anywhere in the Bible? Deuteronomy 28, verse 15. Deuteronomy 28. Several places we can go here. It's not hard. I'm not so sure that Moses was an economic professor, but some of the same principles today are, back then, is the same as they are today. That's not correct. Yeah, it is too. But it shall come to pass, if you do not obey the voice of the Lord your God, to observe carefully all his commandments and his statutes, which I command you this day, that all these curses will come upon you and overtake you. Now, you did have laws. These are financial laws, and one has to do with debt, and one has to do with borrowing. You will find in the statutes of God that when a person did not and could not pay his debt, even though it was borrowed from people, because the person simply needed to support his family, a very worthy cause to borrow it, he still had to pay it off. Even if he had to work it off. But that's something God required. You just don't borrow money and not do that. But you also have to be very careful about borrowing money. And even then, you couldn't charge usury for that money. And take advantage of a person in the terrible situation that he and his family might be in. You don't do that. I hope we don't do that. As a matter of fact, I think we feel somebody who's in need, you give them the money. Just give it, hey, that's it. I'm not going to, a little bit of a different system. They allowed that, and the person then was indentured for a period up to 7 years. Okay. Now, he said, but he wanted you to observe carefully all those commandments and statutes had to be followed and obeyed, and you would have a prosperous system that kept you out of trouble later on, if you're going to follow that. Cursed shall you be in the city, cursed shall you be in the country. We always thought living in the bush, if I can use the Australian term, was a great place to be. That's not what I hear people saying now. You realize how bad it is in the bush. Well, that's exactly what he said here. Cursed shall you be in the city. Now that we all always knew. Now cursed shall you be in the bush. Sorry, I'm using the Australian term, but that's what Moses said. Cursed shall you be your basket and your kneading bowl. Cursed shall be the fruit of your womb. You know, a lot of us are wheat intolerant right now. That's what it says. What happened to us? Cursed shall be the fruit of your body and the produce of your land, the increase of your cattle and the offspring of your flock. The increase of your cattle. Government steps in. We can't sell our cattle anymore. It's going to take a while to build that back. They jumped on a new story. You don't know how pervasive it was. You don't know where they got the pictures. You don't know anything. Could have been a Rupert Murdoch deal. You have no idea. Next day, no more cattle. We're not going to sell it to you anymore. Because look what you've done. And all the people who were doing it the right way, then say, well, wait a minute. Oh, I guess we better get from Argentina or Brazil. Okay. We have some problems in our country. Cursed shall you be when you come in. Cursed shall you be when you go out. The Lord will send on you cursing, confusion, and rebuke in all that you set your hand to do. You know what that's about? And I'm going to refer to it in just a moment. It's simply leadership. Simply leadership. We operate in a different way in the world today than what used to be as early as 20, almost 30 years ago, when once in a while you had a leader. 50 years before that, you had lots of leaders. And before that, I mean, you had good leadership. I'm asking, where are the leaders today? We're talking about leadership here. That's why there's confusion. There's not a clear voice. There's not a say, look, here's what we can do. Gets all the people together and gathers them in and say, here's a plan. And he charges them up, convinces them here's the way to go. Here's how we can get out of our problems, folks. You know how it's being done today? A grassroots level called the Tea Party. And once you get a group like that together, you're going to come up with a coherent plan that everybody can agree to. Or would it take, rather, leadership from people who ought to be showing leadership? Not against, God love them. The Tea Party is doing the best they know how. But the leadership are the ones who are responsible. And so we've got a president, can't pull this thing together. We've got what apparently looked like a person who was the Speaker of the House. Quite a good-looking individual. A person who spoke well, seemed to be in control. Can't bring it together. We suffer from leadership, folks. And here is one of the problems here. There's no single voice that's out there that says, is giving a plan, and that can get people motivated and moved to solve the problem. I guarantee you, if somebody would come up with a plan to the people of the United States and had the floor, so to speak, if the president, whose job it is to do this, could do that, look, you're going to find people who would rally around a good and a solid and a reasonable plan simply because you've got leadership. And it'll give them some confidence to do something about it. So, yeah, we got a big debt. Okay, let's figure out how we're going to pay this off, how we're going to produce more, how we're going to get ourselves together and get ourselves straightened out, our heads straightened out, and start going down the right track. Folks, I just nail it right in the idea of leadership. Now, I may be making a few quantum leaps here for you, but really, this is where it's at. And we don't have that today. let me just cover a couple of points here. I want to come back to that, and I'll show you in the Bible where God says Israel does not have that. Didn't have it then, and it's at a certain point in their history, and they don't have it now. In Deuteronomy chapter 28, same chapter we're in, verse 42. Locusts shall consume all your trees and the produce of your land. Now, I'm not blaming that on leadership necessarily, but I just simply want to say, so we got rain. And what grows from the good rain? You know how many places that we have locust plagues in this country, or we did last year and the year before? And there's eating and consuming everything. The alien who is among you shall rise higher and higher above you, and you shall come down lower and lower. He shall lend to you, but you shall not lend to him. He shall be the head, and you shall be the tail. Things get turned around. The United States has lost its dominant position. It was a false position to start with. In 2008, now we lost it. It's not there anymore. Somebody else is going to call the tune, which will be outside the control of the United States. This is so poignant, so startling, these statements here. He shall lend to you, and you shall not lend to him. Moreover, all these curses shall come upon you and pursue and overtake you. This shows that it simply develops over a period of time. Pursue and overtake. Important words here. Until you are destroyed because you did not obey the voice of the Lord your God and keep his commandments and his statutes which he commanded you. We started going down a certain road here a long time ago, and it wound up this way. They shall be upon you for a sign and a wonder, and on your descendants forever, until we're rescued. And I believe it's going to be the rescue by someone a whole lot bigger than us who's going to come back and save his people. Because you did not serve the Lord your God with joy and gladness of heart for the abundance of everything. Therefore you shall serve your enemies, whom the Lord will send against you in hunger and in thirst and nakedness and in need of everything, and he will put a yoke of iron on your neck until he has destroyed you. If you think government's bad now, you wait till they get a hold of you and start extracting everything out of your country that they can. And the Lord will bring a nation against you from afar, from the end of the earth, as swift as the eagle flies. A nation whose language you will not understand. Just let your imagination run on that one. A nation of fierce countenance, which does not respect the elderly, nor show favor to the young. And they shall eat the increase of your livestock and the produce of your land until you are destroyed, and they shall not leave you grain or new wine or oil, or the increase of your cattle, or the offspring of your flocks, until they have destroyed you. They shall besiege you in all your gates, until your high and fortified walls, in which you trust, come down throughout all your land, and they shall besiege you at your gates throughout all your land, in which the Lord your God has given you. All right. There's an equivalent today. America is going to have to pull back. They already do. Pulling back on their spending of the military. They just can't do it. They're going to pull back. You're going to find you're not going to be able to support the Navy. You're not going to be able to support the aircraft carriers you've got. And as I've said before, there's one thing that we need in this world, and that is the USS Ronald Reagan sitting right out there anywhere between New Zealand, Australia, in the north. Got to be there. Taiwan sure wants it there. Got enough firepower in that thing to do a lot of damage. Can't afford it anymore. Got a problem. Here's some of the things that are going to go. One thing after another. They're not going to be able to support it. Now, I want to talk about the Hendra virus. No, I don't want to talk about that. So let's pass that up. What's happening to our country? Where are we going? What kind of decisions are we making? Does anybody know what to do anymore with these problems? Do you have good, solid, coherent solutions? Now, God had a plan to give this nation, or his nation, great power and blessings as a part of bringing the 6,000-year of man's experience to an end. It's something he had to do. It was a part of the way he wanted to do this. Now, there was a time back the original captivity of Israel and Judah. He began, once he blessed those nations, he gave them, they were prime. I mean, they were just so blessed to have God as their God. And they had certain periods of just enormous power and blessing. And then God not only predicted, but allowed Gentile empires to rise one after the other. And you can read this in the book of Daniel. And in the midst of those empires, as they did continue on through history, he's taken care of his people. He's worked to where he brought his people through all of that and brought them out to the very end of this age to where they would become a great nation and a multitude of nations. And he's got them through all of that, carried out exactly what he said he would do as a witness as to who he is, and he is, however, going to allow them to choose their own ways in the end. Now, there is one great Gentile kingdom that is yet to rise, and we see the opportunity for it to rise now. For 65 years, we've been saying that it's going to happen in quite a direct way. We've said that. This past week, there was an agreement reached in Europe. You just didn't hear about it that much. Everybody was saying the euro is history. Everybody's saying they can't sustain a one currency in Europe. Let me tell you something. Not only is it going to be sustained, it is going to be similar to the gold standard that came into play somewhat 80 years ago, or maybe before that. Don't have all those figures right there. Okay, this is equivalent to that, where the euro will now become a standard, and they decided. That is the European, the leaders of what they call the Eurozone. Let me see if I can read this from the Telegraph. This is by authorizing a huge expansion in the bailout fund that is propping up the EU's peripheral members. Largely in order to stop the contagion spreading in Italy and Spain, the Eurozone has taken a decisive step to becoming a fiscal union. And it goes on to explain, it's quite a good article that analyzed it, if the settlements are accepted, and a lot of times they just don't have the ability not to accept it. I mean, they got to go along with it if they're going to exist some way. Europe will cease to be a collection of nation states. They have to be controlled by this. This is the final realization of the dream, this article goes on to say, that animated the founders of the common market more than half a century ago, which is one reason why so many prominent Europeans have privately welcomed the Eurozone catastrophe, labeling it as a beneficial crisis. All right, so there's people who see beyond this, and just bailing Greece out, it goes far beyond that. Now we see something else pretty big that's happening. It is conceivable that at yesterday's, this was last week, negotiations may indeed save the Eurozone, but it is worth pausing to consider the consequences of European fiscal union. First, it will mean the economic destruction of most of the southern European countries. Sorry about that, Sal. their economic sovereignty has been obliterated. They face a future as vassal states, their role reduced to one enjoyed by the European colonies of the 19th and early 20th centuries. They will provide cheap labor, raw materials, agricultural produce, and a ready market for the manufactured goods and services provided by the far more productive and efficient northern Europeans. While these nations relapse into pre-modern economic systems, Germany is busy turning into one of the most dynamic and productive economies in the world. Yesterday's witching hour of the European Union means that Germany has come very close to realizing Bismarck's dream of an economic empire stretching from Central Europe to the Eastern Mediterranean. In other words, you got the money, and you're the one lending the money. You're the one's going to call the tune. And they're in a situation where they don't have a lot of choice in the matter. I thought it was a fascinating article, and the article at the beginning, which I didn't read to you, goes on to show that in 1929, with the practically destruction or the fall of the Weimar Republic, led then Germany then to take a dominant role in Europe and exercise a certain leadership, as Germany will do. All right. These are brilliant people. These are industrious people, and they are not going to succumb to the weakening debt that the rest of the Western world seems to have gotten itself into. So these other nations, they want to be a part of it. Germany's going to call the tune. Now, we have this kind of a situation rapidly developing. They're looking at this as to something quite significant that happened this week, this past week, when they decided they are going to broaden their bailout packages for a lot of these nations. So once you do that, you start getting control. There is a leadership vacuum in the world. Somebody is going to step in. Somebody. Who is in the best position to do this? Isaiah chapter 3 is interesting. Now, I want to finish up with this, with some things here. I want to show you this to help you understand Bible prophecy a little better. Now, let me just explain something. You have to take the first 11 chapters of Isaiah together as a whole. Two of those chapters tell you the way it's going to be in the kingdom of God under Christ's rule. The rest of them tells you what the problems really are in Israel today. And it contrasts the two. Now, come Feast of Tabernacles, I want to draw more of a distinction here in what you see in how God describes Israel. And I'm only going to read it from chapter 3 today. But you have to compare that and contrast that with chapter 2 and chapter 11 describing the rule of the kingdom of God. And you're going to see an enormous difference. You should understand the first 11 chapters of Isaiah in that way. And it becomes quite telling. For behold, the Lord of hosts, takes away from Jerusalem and from Judah the stock and the store, the whole supply of bread, the whole supply of water, the mighty man and the man of war, the judge and the prophet, the diviner and the elder, the captain of 50, the honorable man, the counselor and the skillful artisan, the expert enchanter, people who should have the ability to solve it are not that stupid they're going to get into government. Those people are gone off the scene. I will give children to be their princes, and babes shall rule over them. The people will be oppressed, and every one by another, and every one by his neighbor. And the child will be insolent toward the elder, and the base toward the honorable. You're going to find that the whole idea of fairness, giving people a fair go, as we say in this country, you're going to find a lot of it goes. It's just not there anymore. You're going to find that the honorable person, then, where are you going to find that today in terms of leadership? When a man takes hold of his brother, the house of his father, saying, you have clothing, be our ruler, and let these ruins be under your power. In that day, he will protest, saying, I can't cure your ills, for in my house is neither food nor clothing. Do not make me a ruler of the people. At least he's smart enough to know that. For Jerusalem stumbled, and Judah is fallen, because their tongue and their doings are against the Lord, to provoke the eyes of his glory. The look on their countenance witnesses against them. They declare their sin as Sodom. They do not hide it. Woe to their soul, for they have brought evil upon themselves. Look, when a culture then is so taken with entertainment, so taken with sports, so taken with who is on the entertainment and the celebrity circuit, whether it's in the print media, whether it's on the internet, whether it's on television, whether it's anywhere. And we're so taken by that to become distracted. I mean, folks, we really got a problem. We really do. That's what it's talking about here. They do not hide it. Woe to their soul, for they have brought evil upon themselves. Say to the righteous that it shall be well with them, for they shall eat the fruit of their doings. Woe to the wicked, it shall be ill with him, for the reward of his hands shall be given him. Okay. As for my, some are going to do okay. Others simply will not. As for my people, children are their oppressors and women rule over them. O my people, those who lead you cause you to err and destroy the way of your paths. All you got to do is see oppression, you see taxation, you see laws that make people conform. Contrast that with chapter 2. Verse 2, it shall come to pass in the latter days that the mountain of the Lord's house shall be established in the top of the mountains and shall be exalted above the hills, and all nations shall flow into it. I don't get the impression their arms being twisted on this. Many people shall come and say, come, let us go to the mountain of the Lord and the house of the God of Jacob. God's laws are designed for people to be blessed and for people to prosper. And hopefully the contrast will be seen at this point by everyone. He will teach us of his ways, and we shall walk in his paths, for out of Zion shall go forth the law and the word of the Lord from Jerusalem. This is not autocratic. People say, oh, well, the kingdom is going to be absolute autocratic, iron fist rule. No, it's not. Read this the way it reads here. Here is such wonderful ways and leadership coming forth then from the mountain of the Lord of hosts, where people say, this is the way we want to go. This is it. Tell us. They're asking for it. That's going to be leadership in the kingdom of God. It's going to be based upon the best values, the right values, according to the law of God. He shall judge between the nations and rebuke many people. He's going to do that because he's not going to allow another nation to come against another. Leave him alone. He says, you do your thing and do the best you can with the laws of God that I'm giving you, and let this nation alone to do their thing. Don't jump in and start taking stuff they've got. He'll stop it. He's not going to let that happen, but he's going to get the people have the opportunity. They shall beat their swords into plowshares, their spears into pruning hooks. Nation shall not lift up sword against nation, neither shall they learn war anymore. It's over. Now, we have that. You have Isaiah chapter 11. Like I said, you've got to read it all together, and you can see poor government, oppressive government. You have curses that go along with that, as opposed to God's government and the way he does it. There shall come forth a rod from the stem of Jesse, a branch that shall grow out of his roots. The Spirit of the Lord shall rest upon him, the Spirit of wisdom and of understanding, the Spirit of counsel and might, the Spirit of knowledge and the fear of the Lord. This is wonderful, isn't it? Love to be under this kind of government. His delight is in the fear of the Lord. He shall not judge by the sight of his eyes, nor decide by the hearing of his ears. It doesn't matter who's who. But with righteousness he will judge the poor. They're going to get a break. And decide with equity for the meek of the earth. Yeah, they're going to have it. And he shall strike the earth with a rod of his mouth, and with the breath of his lips he shall slay the wicked. In other words, they're going to wither. with the truth that comes forth from him. They cannot handle what he's going to tell them. Righteousness shall be the belt of his loins, and faithfulness of the belt of his waist. He said, you want to know how good it's going to get? The wolf is going to dwell with a lamb. Can't do that now. Okay. I think you get the point here. Revelation chapter 9. Revelation chapter 9. Then the fifth angel sounded, and I saw a star fallen from heaven to the earth. And to him was given the key to the bottomless pit. And he opened the bottomless pit, and smoke arose out of the pit like the smoke of a great furnace. And the sun and the air were darkened because of the smoke of the pit. Now, what comes out of the bottomless pit? What is in there? Let me tell you something you don't want to know, because it's going to come on this earth. In Revelation 13, verse 1, I stood on the sand of the sea, and I saw a beast rising up out of the sea, having seven heads and ten horns on his and on his horns ten crowns, and on his name a blasphemous name. And the beast which I saw was like a leopard. The feet were like the feet of a bear, his mouth like the mouth of a lion. And the dragon gave him power and his throne and great authority. You know how Jesus Christ is pictured? Pictured as a lamb. That's good. A lamb. He's the leader. He gives everybody the fairness through his laws, through his teaching, and wisdom and soundness and goodness, and all of that is going to be there. It is so absolutely wonderful. What do you see here? Chapter 9, it doesn't say beast here, but that's what's coming out of this bottomless pit, a beast that tramples, stamps. Read Daniel chapter 7, what this beast does, and destroys and oppresses and controls and kills. Makes war. That's the government that's going to come. Big difference, isn't it? And what God's doing and what man is doing. And the whole thing is being set up for it to now arise out of the bottomless pit. Don't be too disturbed over the symbolic language, but this is what it means. Out of the smoke, locusts came upon the earth. To them was given power. As the scorpions of the earth have power, they were commanded not to harm the grass of the earth, nor any green thing, nor any tree, but only those men who do not have the seal of God on their foreheads. And they were not given authority to kill them, but to torment them for 5 months, for their torment was like the torment of a scorpion when he strikes a man. I don't take that mean to mean those men who do not have the seal of God. I mean the men, that is, men, generally. That's the way we've understood that. In those days, men, okay, will seek death and will not find it, and they will desire to die, and death will flee from them. So now we have the military arm of a great economic power that will emerge, will devise a way to do warfare in a way that you and I have never seen before. It's quite extraordinary, isn't it? Oh, yeah, it's going to be bad. But they'll get control. The object, control. Object, rule. Total, complete rule over people, over souls of men, over their minds, over everything. Total, complete rule. The devil wants nothing less than that. That is the way he sees things ought to be. God says, that's not the way things ought to be. He's got a totally different kingdom that he is going to bring. Verse 13, then the sixth angel sounded, and I heard a voice from the four horns and the golden altar, which is before God, saying to the sixth angel, who had the trumpet released the four angels who are bound. Good angels are not bound. But these are not good angels, and what I'm saying is, at the great river Euphrates, let them loose, in other words. And the four angels who had been prepared for an hour and a day and a month and a year were released to kill a third of mankind. And now the number of the army of the horsemen was 200 million, and I heard the number of them, and so on. By these, a third of men was killed. Well, I'm simply saying, what do you think the rest of the world is going to do? They're not going to sit by and let it. So you're going to have people, clearly, from the east, who will then respond as the sixth trumpet sounds to what you see in when the fifth angel sounds. It's a response. That's what you're seeing here. And so you have men, armies, empires. Now, who will duke it out, fight it out, and will come to the point where Jesus Christ will, in the very next trumpet, return. It's quite interesting. I simply wanted to draw a picture here for you today to say, well, where is this headed? Where is it going? Where is it all? Why is it happening? I think a lot of us see this, but I did want to include the idea of leadership because it's missing. It is missing today in our nations. There's not a voice. There's not a single voice. There's not a coherent voice that is going to lead our people out of it. Jesus Christ will give that voice, and he will send people. Now, you might ask our part. You know, God wants you to see this. God has people now who are going to live in the end time. I would say there would be a lot more of them before it's over with, who have to see this. And these ones are going to be used in the kingdom of God to establish something totally different. They see, they understand the problems. They understand how we got into the problems. They understand what God's laws say and how they work and how they work best. And how government ought to run and how it ought to operate for the absolute the best interest of the people. That's what's going to happen in the kingdom of God. And we have people here today as we go through it. We agonize. I read what's happening and I agonize over it. You know? So what's happening? I'm learning. I hope you are too. I hope we're all learning as a result. God says we've got to live in it. And we have to somehow experience it. And at the same time, we also know the Lamb of God, the one who is going to actually bring the solution one day, and we can have absolute hope in that. Thank you very much for coming today. We'll see you next week.